Welcome to Let's Talk Land, a weekly land education talk show devoted to learning about land and farms, buying and selling, ownership, and especially for real estate agents and realtors. Learn from the experts. This is free land education. Hi, my name's Lou Jewell. I'm an accredited land consultant, broker owner of United Country Real Estate, Land Pro, and my doggy Shadow today, buying and selling homes, land, or farms in Western Piedmont, North Carolina, or Southern Virginia. Just give us a shout. We'll help you out. Our office is located at 3349 Cook School Road in Pilot Mountain, North Carolina, on Highway 52, exit 136, across from Foothills Hardware and Building Supply. We share office space with Freedom Designs and Marketing for all of your graphic needs. Our company website is www.mylandpro.com. Our guest today is Chris Raleigh. Welcome, Chris.
Hey, Lou. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure. We got some interesting stuff to talk about today. You founded Harvest Returns is the name of your company, and you're located where?
We are in Fort Worth, Texas.
Fort Worth, Texas. What a beautiful town. I've been there several times. It's one of my favorites, especially at night. Boy, they really light that place up. It's beautiful. And you started this company back in 2016 with the intention of bringing together agriculture producers and investors using the process of equity crowdfunding. And that's a term a lot of people haven't heard of, and I went to Wikipedia, I use a lot. And if I may, crowdfunding is the practice of funding a project or venture by raising small amounts of money from a large number of people, typically via the Internet. Crowdfunding is a form of crowdsourcing and alternative finance. In 2015, a worldwide estimate totaled over $34 billion was raised by crowdfunding. Although similar concepts can also be executed through mail order subscriptions, benefit events, and other methods, the term crowdfunding refers to internet-mediated registers. The modern crowdfunding model is generally based on three types of actors: the project initiator, whose purpose is the idea or project to be funded, individuals or group who support the idea, and then the moderating organization or the platform that brings the parties together to launch the idea. Crowdfunding has been used for fund a wide range of profit entrepreneurial ventures such as artistic and creative projects, medical expenses, travel, community orientation, social and entrepreneurship. And now you brought to the table this crowdfunding concept. Tell me how you apply that based on this, what I just talked about.
Yeah, so Lou, you did a pretty good job of explaining how crowdfunding works. And you know, one thing, crowdfunding, the firm, you know, we don't use it all that often, but it kind of gets a bad rap because people confuse it with like Kickstarter and GoFundMe, where, you know, if somebody wants to raise money to, you know, buy their cat a costume or something. And that's, you know, it's basically electronic panhandling. Well, the kind of crowdfunding that we're doing is equity-based crowdfunding, and it was made possible by the Jobs Act of 2012. And basically what we do is we put investors together with farmers who want to raise money to expand their operation or to start a new operation. We're focused exclusively on production agriculture.
And you also get into timber too, right?
Right. We've done some sort of tree crop deals. We're talking to some timber owners about doing like a timber fund or some timber stands. But we definitely anything that grows, that's kind of our bailiwick.
Okay. Just a little bit about your background. Your passion's bringing more people closer to the producers of their food is reflected in the company's motto, democratizing investments in agriculture. I really love that. It's really nice from farming and timber. You're a native of Dallas, Texas, and currently reside in Fort Worth. After several years as active duty naval officer, and thank you for your service, your interest in real asset investing began as a property manager with John Lang LaSalle, running a $100 million commercial portfolio in Dallas. Subsequently to that position, you held a corporate management roles with Electronic Data Systems. What was that?
So I worked in information technology, product management. I also worked in the security department with Electronic Data Systems.
Gotcha. Is this stuff that you were trained in your military, or is this stuff that you did on your own?
A little bit of both, training, military, a little bit of college went into that as well.
Okay. And then you were with L3 Communications. What was that? It served as a defense consultant to the United States Special Operations Command at Blackbird Technologies. What was that job about?
Those roles, basically, I was a defense contractor working at Special Operations Command there in Tampa. And I did a lot of things dealing with counterterrorism and planning and stuff I can't talk a whole lot about.
I understand.
It's a very interesting part of my life.
You can send it to me in Morse code. Nobody will understand it.
There you go.
You've invested in residential and commercial real estate, including income-producing land, for more than 20 years. So that's a really nice background to apply that experience to this product that you guys are providing. You were a captain in the U.S. Navy Reserve, having served in Afghanistan, Iraq, and throughout Africa and the Persian Gulf and the Western Pacific. So you got around, didn't you?
Yeah, you know, I've traveled all around the world. I think I've been to 50-something countries. And that travel is one of the things that sort of inspired me to start this company, because no matter where I went, a lot of war-torn, poverty-stricken countries, one thing, people have to have a place to live, even if it's a dirt hut or a mud hut, and people have to eat, and so they have to grow things. So every country I've ever been to, people were growing things or raising livestock, and that agriculture is something that we take really for granted here in the U.S. You know, most people think their food comes from a supermarket, and they don't appreciate everything that goes into growing it. So that's kind of why we started this company, Harvest Returns.
It's people don't really realize how we have it here, do they? I had some friends on Christmas. Is actually a live show. I hadn't done one there from Miami, but Mr. Martinez owns four radio stations. His wife has been a correspondent for the Latin-speaking countries, God, for 30 years, and traveled. They've been in 64 different countries, mostly Latin. They've been to China, they've been to Italy, Greece, like that, but mostly Spanish-speaking countries. And, comparing the lifestyles and the agriculture, just the whole culture, people don't realize how well we have it, and I hope we can maintain that.
I hope so, too. We're definitely blessed here.
Our topic today is the farmer and the rancher who needs capital, okay? That's what we're going to talk about. And by the way, for those that want to tune in, on your website is www.harvestreturns.com. We'll mention that later. But you got quite an extensive website, and a lot of the material that I pulled off is from your site. So if you're out there listening, you got on your phone or something, want to pull this up, because Chris and his company have something that's very unique in our industry right now, right? Do you have any competition, really?
So there's a couple other companies, online platforms, that are starting to do different niches in agriculture. Some of them are newer than us. Some of them have been around a little bit longer than we have. But there's definitely a lot of interest in agriculture. And one of the reasons we started the company was because it's a hard investment to access. So, you know, the best way to get into farming and making money off of farming is to go out and buy a piece of land, right?
Right.
But that costs a lot of money. I was at an investment sort of conference a couple of weeks ago, and they said that the average farm in the U.S. is $4 million. So I'd say the vast majority of us don't have that kind of money laying around. Most family farm or most farms in the U.S., 98% of them are still owned by families.
Right.
You hear a lot about corporate farming and all that kind of stuff, but when you get right down to it, they're farms, and most of those large ones are multi-generational farms. And if you want to start something new, especially if you're a young person without a big track record or credit, that's hard to come by the equity and the financing. And so what we provide is an alternative source of financing for farmers, besides just the banking system and ag credit unions and all that sort of thing.
So would you be able to finance a starter, a young person starting? Maybe they've gone to Farm Credit, which is one of the national lenders, and there's several out there. Because, the banking rule, anything over 5 acres is considered a non-conforming loan. And like Farm Credit, they're set up with a 20-year max. But usually your interest rate's about 2 basis points over what the conventional commercial home market is. So interest rates were 5%, your land loans are going to be 7%. and they're not qualifying. So is this where you come in and help, or you come once someone has a farm, they want to expand? I mean, how do you guys fit in competing with the sources that are out there?
Yeah, so there's a couple different ways, and I wouldn't necessarily say we compete with companies like Farm Credit, because we offer just alternatives, creative financing alternatives. So we can do debt or equity. One example of a debt we did was a cattle note. We raised about $500,000 for a guy last year just to do the operating or the acquisition loans on his cattle. He'd already had land. The other means, and we brought that money in to buy the cattle, and our investors are just taking a return on that note from the cattle. Other ways we can do it is we can bring in equity investors. So if somebody, that young farmer you just talked about, if he is looking, he's talking to Farm Credit or another financing source, and say they have a 25% debt to or equity to debt, a requirement, so he needs to bring some equity in. Maybe he's got some family members that's pitching a little money. Well, we can bring in, you know, $500,000 that he can go out and get a $2 million piece of land. So that's another way we can do it.
And so you're, obviously, for your investors, what type of returns are you giving them?
So it varies depending on what the way it's structured and what the crop is. That particular note that I just talked about is an 8% return payable quarterly, 3-year note. So that's just more of a sort of a bridge financing note. But we have longer term investments where it might be anywhere from, say, that 8% on up into closer to 20%
really?
For the more developmental projects. So it's like anything else. There's various risk return profiles. And, you know, you can go out and buy – invest in other types of if you buy the land yourself, say row crops, you're probably going to see over the long term maybe an 11% return if you count the cash crop rent plus the appreciation on the land over the long term. But we basically enable you to do the same sort of thing, but you're investing a much lower minimum. So instead of, you know, putting in $1 million, you're coming in at $5,000 or $10,000 or $20,000.
And you're tying this up with a note against the asset, is that correct?
Yeah, so in the case of the debt, it would be a note against the asset, secured, lien filed, all that stuff. In the case of equity, you're actually taking, you are pooling with other investors, hence the crowdfunding, to take an equity stake in the company. So we require the farmers we work with to set up some sort of corporate structure. They don't already have one. And we have all, you know, the official legal documents so that you are your investment is safe and as safe as, and you know, they're backed by land or backed by infrastructure, depending on what kind of farm it is. If it's, say, a dairy, there's obviously a lot of built-up infrastructure, not just the land component. If it's something like timberland, well, yeah, it's basically just the trees, you know, the land and the trees.
Right. And that's usually on a 25 to 30-year on your plantation pines anyway, normally, right?
Right. It can be. Timber is definitely probably the longest term sort of investment out there, because it takes a while to get those trees growing, and generally, you know, you're not going to see your return on timberland until maybe year 16 or 18. There may be a couple thinnings,
right.
You know, one or two thinnings,
right.
Over in the middle of that, and there may be some recreational, you know, hunting leases, things like that. They're enough to cover your management fees and your taxes if you're lucky. But yeah, timber is one of those. It's a lot of institutions like, so there's institutions like university endowments, you know, people hear about like Harvard University endowment has like billions and billions of dollars invested in things like farmland and timber things, pension funds like ag, and there's some private equity funds, but up until recently, like I said, it's been very challenging. If you're just a individual guy that wants to get into this sort of asset class, there weren't a lot of choices, and that's what we help people do.
Okay. So our guest today is Chris Raleigh, and this is Let's Talk Land. Our guest today is Chris Raleigh with a very, very interesting company, Harvest Returns. Their website's www.harvestreturns.com. So if you want to pull that up on your phone or your iPad while we're having this conversation, there's a lot of information. It's very well done. Congratulations on that. And continuing our conversation, about investing into agriculture and timber land. Why invest in agriculture? Why would somebody want to invest in agriculture, in your opinion?
So I see three big reasons, and the first one is all about demographics. Obviously, the population keeps getting expanding. They say that there's going to be 10 billion people, 3 billion more than there is now, roughly by 2050, and so the next 25 years or so. So people have to eat. Everyone has to eat. Everyone, and farmers are the people that produce the food, not grocery stores, like a lot of people think. Food comes from grocery stores, no, it comes from farmers.
That's right.
So the other thing about that is, the world's getting richer. A lot of countries are coming out of poverty, and, it's a proven sort of fact that when people get richer, they start to shift from plant protein to animal protein. So that takes a lot of land to grow their livestock. The other thing is urbanization around the world. All that arable land is being covered by people who need to live somewhere. So that's the other piece of it. And then people are getting really specialized in their diets here in the U.S. and like Europe. And so you see, people on their high protein diets, the paleo and the vegan, the vegan diets, and people want organic, and people want non-GMO, and so all that specialization requires specialized growing methods. So that the first part is demographics. The second reason I think a lot of people like agriculture, like I mentioned, the institutions, is simply the return. So if you look at just farmland returns over the past decade or so, they've actually exceeded the Dow and the S&P 500, the stock indexes. Now, a lot of people are probably thinking, well, my cousin's a farmer, and he's losing his shirt these days. Well, yeah, that's true. There's a lot of farmers in the U.S., especially, that are hurting because of the slump in commodity prices. So if you're a soy farmer, a corn farmer, you've probably not been doing so great the past few years just because those commodities are currently pretty low. But I guarantee you the people that own that land are pretty happy because the land keeps increasing in price. And finally, for diversifying a portfolio. So if you're an investor and you've got some money in, say, a 401k, or you've got some money in the stock market, bonds,
right.
Seen these past few weeks, yeah. That's kind of a scary place to be. But if you're in agriculture, you're diversifying the portfolio in something tangible and real, just like real estate. And the returns from agriculture are negatively correlated to stocks and bonds. So that means basically, they're definitely not correlated, but they can also be negatively correlated. So the market can do what the market's going to do, but your land and your crops are still going to grow, and people are still going to want to eat. So that's the three reasons I see that people want to invest in agriculture.
Okay. And you can be a passive investor. You don't actually have to be, you got Farmers National out there and the Hertz Corporation, for example. There's others, too. I mentioned them because they're my RLI buddies. Realtors Land Institute, but they actually manage farms for individuals and also for corporations. So even maybe not owning, by investing, being one of the investors, if I was interested, I could still own a farm as a share of ownership with my investment, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So our investments are passive. If you're on the farmer side and you're worried about bringing in outside investors who are going to tell you what to grow and how to grow it, that's not the way we work. The investors are purely passive. So they do like to see updates. So one of the things we provide is we ask our farmers, once the farm is funded, they send us pictures of that calves that your herd just have, or send us a picture of your family working the farm, and of course send us financial updates on how everything's performing. And those distributions are coming along, whether they're annual or quarterly or when the property sold or however the investment's structured.
Right. So we're talking about timber investments. We're talking about row crops, tree crops, which is different than just the timber, okay? Livestock, the four-legged type, like Shada. And, of course, indoor agriculture, a lot of hydroponic stuff being grown. And what about the marijuana around? Is that something you guys could lend some funds to?
Yeah, so everybody asks us about the marijuana and the cannabis because it's a hot thing. Those stocks people made a lot of money on stocks, although people lately have lost a lot of money on the stocks. The problem with investing in marijuana is that the regulations vary. So Canada, it's 100% legal now. You got California, Colorado, and then several other states where it's in various stages of becoming legal from medicinal to recreational marijuana. But when you want to raise from a U.S. investment standpoint, though, it's challenging. So we don't do marijuana investments, at least not at this point. Hemp is more related. It's kind of related just because those both contain the chemical THC, and hemp has the really trace amounts of the THC in the CBD oils. But the farm bill that was just passed last week allows for the kind of the free transportation and growing and everything of hemp. So we're hearing from some hemp farmers that want to raise some capital, and we're really interested in hearing from some more because we think that's a lot of people are really interested in the products of hemp, and it's a growing industry.
Yeah, they just passed last year in North Carolina the hemp. So one of my, again, ALC, our ally buddies, he's actually started a hemp farm. And I haven't talked to him about his financials and where he stands, but I might be hooking you guys up in case he needs some help. And that's what you guys are, that's your job, right?
Yeah, that's what we do. We help we help them build a business by bringing in some outside investors.
Why would they make a decision to go to the outside normally?
Well, people, some of the people we talk to, they're either already over-leveraged with land loans, and they're just not able to get any more loans to expand. So the other, I talked about family farms. The other thing you see with farms is they're getting bigger. So the average farm size is getting bigger across the U.S., and that's because of the economies of scale and the competition. And our farmers in the U.S. are competing not just against the farm in the next section or the next county, but they're competing with those massive farms down in Brazil. They're growing soy and all those sorts of things. So the competitive environment is tough. So, we want farmers to be able to get loans, but if they need to bring in some equity or they need to do something sort of out of the ordinary besides just going out and getting a land loan, an operating loan, like maybe their father or grandfather did, then they can come to us and we can help structure something a little bit more sophisticated and bring in some investors that will enable them to do some things. The other thing we talked to some young farmers. They may have a lot of student debt, so they're not able to get a land loan, or they just don't have the track record it takes to get like an FSA loan. And those loans have very favorable terms for the most part, but they're also hard to access, and credit in some cases is tightening. Farm credit is tightening.
Right.
So we maybe will help those farmers that want to get into something like that.
Chris, what would be the smallest loan you would consider?
So pretty much the smallest deal we will work with will be about $500,000.
Okay.
We get our average deal size is anywhere between $500,000 up to $2 or $3 million or so. We get people come to us and say, hey, I've been growing something in my tomatoes in my backyard and a little greenhouse, and I just need $20,000 or $50,000 to buy a bigger one so I can sell the farmer's market. And that's, good on those people for growing food and being independent and starting
a
business.
God bless
them. Just kind of too small for us to work with.
So, like for example, the $500,000 loan with this crowdfunding, how many people would normally be part of the crowdfunding? Just may not be a great question, but I'm just curious.
Like I said, our sort of investment minimums range anywhere between maybe $5,000 and $20,000 to $25,000. But we see when we do, say, a $500,000 raise, I mentioned that cattle note, we had investors invest in everything from $10,000 up to $150,000. So on that particular note, I think there was the average investment was about $50,000. So,
right.
It all depends on what you got to invest. A lot of people we talk to are just, kind of everyday people that want to diversify their portfolio, but we also have some investors that are pretty sophisticated and high net worth with multi-million-dollar portfolios, and they want to diversify into agriculture.
On your website, you say your platform allows qualified investors to choose from a variety of carefully screened and selected private agricultural investments. Many of these investments feature suitable organic product production methods. I'm sorry. So how do you screen the Lindy?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Lou. So when a farmer comes to us, we ask a bunch of questions, kind of initial screening questions. And they, you know, what we're looking for is, what is your knowledge of what you're trying to grow? So what's your experience? So in the case of a young farmer, that's great if you're eager, but if you grew up on a farm, that's helpful. Or you went to school and got some education in ag, that's helpful. So the track record, or if you're a bigger, you know, if you're a more business-like operation, that's really good. You've done the ideal one, but we're interested in hearing from everybody. You know, we're looking at your business plan mostly. So can you grow what you say you can grow, and can you produce returns that will make our investors happy as planned? So we're also looking at things like, what's the market for what you're growing? Where is the farm located? Do you have all your ducks in a row as far as corporate structure and legal documents? And we can help with that, and we can help with a business plan and all those sorts of things. So we need a little bit more than just an idea, like, hey, I need $1 million to grow something, you know, hemp. Well, that's great, but how are you going to make money for investors? And some people can answer that question, some people can't. I mean, we can also help put that deal together so it makes sense for investors.
So, again, on your website, it just says, institutional investors and ultra-wealthy have long understood the value of private investment in natural resources. Passive income is how you create wealth. Now you, too, can access these deals for as little as $5,000. And, yes, you can invest by using your IRA to get tax-free and tax-deferred gains. Just briefly explain that. Your IRA, using that as investment.
Right. So, yeah, people can use their individual retirement account. A lot of people have 401ks, or they may have left a job, and you can transfer that money into what's called a self-directed IRA. And we work with a number of self-directed IRA companies that allow you to put that money into our offering.
And you've got those companies on your website identifying those, I guess, as sponsors for you. So you got quite a few. And people don't realize that. I did a show with Chad back early on, and he's out in Colorado. And, you know, they have a company that will take your IRA or investment funds that are corporately held and move them into a self-direct. Of course, now, when you do that, that has to be managed, sort of like an intermediary when you're doing a 1031 like kind of exchange. You know, someone else is actually directing that, and there's some stipulations to it. The IRS codes have set up, so you know, it's something that can be used, but you got to be understanding that the application and the requirements, and it can be done, but it's not just something that's real easy to do if you don't have the understanding of it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You got to have a custodian that knows what they're doing, and we work with them, and you know, we can pretty much take an investment from an individual, from an entity, from somebody with a wealth advisor, from somebody with a self-directed IRA, somebody who set up as a trust, you name it. You know, not everybody just invests in their own name. So we're pretty flexible in how we work with those people.
And you can do a blended investment, too, where you're taking money, say, from the stock market or and using an IRA or self-direct. You can actually blend your portfolio and diversify that way, too, correct? It doesn't
have
to be a one source of money coming from one pot. You can pull it out of two or three pots, and put that together to have your portion of investment.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
All right. We're talking to my friend Chris Raleigh down in beautiful Fort Worth, Texas. This is Let's Talk Land. Chris, let's continue on here with you've got some actual projects on your website, current offerings. To mention a few, one of them is the organic Calco farm in Belize. Tell me about that. What's that about? And what are you looking for?
Sure. So when we started the company about 2 years ago, we were looking for some investments that we really didn't know where to start on the farmer side. And I'll tell you, we were worried at first about being able to find enough farmers that would come to us for money. And I talked about some of the reasons earlier why they might come to us. But we have had, since we started putting our word out that we're helping farmers raise capital, we've had over 300 farmers come to us that want to raise.
Let me interrupt you there. How are you putting the word out?
So yeah, mostly on our website. We've gone to some ag shows. We do podcasts and radio shows like this one. But, you know, people catch wind of us. People refer us. So a lot of people finding us. But we've had farmers that want to raise over $700 million. So it's just amazing. Now, not all those that, you know, those
That's
300
huge.
Farmers that have come to us, not all their deals are going to qualify. In fact, a very small portion of them are going to qualify based on those requirements that I talked about earlier. But this specific cacao farm was put together from, and this one was actually in Belize, so that's a little tiny country down in Central America. We went and visited, or my COO, Austin Manis, went down to Belize and visited this operation. And I worked with the owners of this farm on a coffee investment that I actually did myself with them. But they did a really good job, so we decided to do a kind of a small pilot raise with this organic cacao farm in Belize, and basically investors came in at $5,000, and we bought a couple of acres worth of cacao farm down there, and it's really interesting. This is grown by the indigenous people down there, and it helps. There's, you know, some nice social aspects to this, but the cool part is they're basically growing chocolate. So cacao is the sort of a fruit that grows on a tree in tropical climates that they take those beans, they ferment them, they dry them, and they crush that down and mix it with other stuff, and that's basically how you get a chocolate bar. So the chocolate industry, you know, it's worldwide, but there's really only a few places you can grow it. And you can grow it in Africa, you can grow it in Central America, and that's about it.
Really? Is that because of the climate, soil, amount of rain? I'm sure probably all three of those, but I guess it has to take a certain amount of type of soil?
Yeah, all of the above. You know, it's the climate, it's the humidity, the rain, and the types of soil.
Are those annual?
Sunlight, all that stuff.
Are those annual crops?
Yeah, cacao, I think it's got a couple of different harvests per year. I'm pretty sure it's an annual. I'm not that familiar with it. Man, we hear from so many different types. We've had people come to us. I learned a lot about agriculture in this job, whether it's livestock, kind of your standard livestock like cattle or sheep or goats, but to really exotic things. Like we've had people come to us and want to raise money for escargot farms. So I learned a lot.
That's cool.
So
where are you on this offering? Are you halfway there? What's your goal?
No, we figured that was a closed offering.
Okay.
That was done.
What'd you raise there? What was your investment? What was your investment number?
So we got, that was a pretty small one, $105,000.
Okay.
Then we did this other project. There's a company in India that's a startup company, and they're basically, this is kind of a little different than our normal one, but we helped a company in India raise capital to start up their company, which is helping small farmers. So if you look at, you know, kind of third world, Africa, South Asia, India, places like that, most farms are kind of like they were here in the U.S. 150 years ago, where
okay.
It's basically the people growing stuff in their backyard. They haven't quite industrialized. So this company in India that we helped raise some money for is helping to scale those smallholder farmers in India by bringing them access to modern things we take for granted here in the U.S., like seeds and fertilizer and those sorts of things, and making it so it's easier for them to scale their operation. So I knew these guys. They went to Texas A&M with them. I'm an Aggie as well, and they've got this really interesting company.
So
that was a neat one.
Is it like a co-op, so it's like 10 or 15 farmers, and they get together with a particular product, or is it one farm?
Yeah, it's multiple farmers, and there's a technology aspect where they have like an app, and it enables them to to do all this stuff wirelessly and to get access to
buy seeds and
fertilizer and things like that that more in a more automated fashion where they just didn't have that, where we kind of take that for granted here.
Right. What was your offering on that one, Chris?
That the total amount they raised was, I think, $240,000, and we helped raise a portion of that. I don't remember at this point.
Yeah, that's fine. So that one's closed out, right?
Yes.
Okay. And then the last one that I had on my notes here was the grass-fed cattle in Georgia. That's interesting. What was their need?
Right. And so that one is the one I was referring to earlier. That was our first debt offering, and we raised, I think, $510,000. and we brought together a number of investors to help fund this cattle note, and it was a it was an 8% return. So people were saying, "What 8%? What does that mean? Is that high or is that low?" So if you're the if you're the farmer, 8% is a little high for a loan. However, the way this was structured was that this guy already had land and he just needed cattle, and he'd already expended some other financing resources. So he's not spending, it's not an overly high amount for the rancher side, the business side. But if you're an investor, so you got 8% and you want a secured note to loan in a private loan, what else are you going to get 8% on? So if you have a certificate deposit, you're probably getting about 2.5% right now. If you have a 10-year treasury bill, which is, the most secure investment there is, supposedly that's about a 2.8-2.9% right now. So here's a 3-year note that's producing about 8%. So from an investment standpoint, there's a lot of people that are just kind of sick of the stock market, scared of the stock market, and want to put their money into something different. And this grass-fed cattle operation is an example of what we provide to investors to be able to do things like that.
Where are you in that offering? Is that one closed out?
Yeah, that one's closed out.
Okay. So do you have anything?
We have some other offerings that are open. Unfortunately, the Securities and Exchange Commission doesn't allow us to advertise our offerings publicly. But one of the things I'll tell you we're really interested in and we're excited about is this indoor agriculture. So
what is that?
The way food is grown in the U.S., it's mostly on those large-scale farms. But people are starting to want to grow food closer to the consumer, and there's a lot of benefits to indoor agriculture. And when I say that indoor agriculture, I'm talking about like hydroponics, so that's growing food and water in greenhouses, aquaponics, which is using fish to kind of fertilize the plants, the waste from the fish. There's aquaculture, which is growing fish inside tanks inside like a warehouse, and then there's vertical farming, and people are growing food inside big warehouses in New York City and places like that. And there's a lot of reasons, a lot of things that favor these investments. And one of them is the management of risk. So you don't have to deal with weather. They consume a lot less water. And, water is a big deal. Water
Absolutely.
Rights is
very
anybody
expensive.
Who's interested in land knows that water rights are key these days, especially if you're in a sort of the out west in a place like California or Arizona. But these indoor agriculture things take a lot less water. They're also, you can grow organically. So if you want to convert, if you're a row crop farmer and you want to convert your operation to organic, because organics is what consumers are wanting these days, there's a high demand for that because the prices are higher. It takes a few years to get that certified by the USDA to grow organics on your land that's been grown with, been growing with chemicals and fertilizer and things
sure.
like that. And if you're growing indoor, you're starting from scratch, so you don't have to worry about converting soil. So people are growing, and that's the final thing is people are growing food close to where it's consumed. So it takes less energy to transport it to the consumer. The produce is fresher, all those sorts of things. So that's one of the reasons we're really interested in working with people who are doing these indoor agriculture operations. And the investment returns are pretty good as well.
Plus, you're utilizing, from the real estate side, you're using a lot of, in some of these depressed areas like Detroit and so on, there's a lot of rooftops. We had one here in North Carolina on the Virginia line out in the middle of nowhere, 280,000 square foot manufacturing plant that had been sitting there for 5 years. It wasn't used for hydroponic, but I'm saying this is a great way to use some of these resources out there, too, for a cheap dollar. $2, $3, $4, $5 a square foot versus building a building and doing all that stuff. So there's more than just the growing of the crops. There's real estate investment too, which is kind of interesting. I'm going to switch gears here if I may. And thank you for that. And of course they can go to your website and definitely can contact you and your staff for some of these other opportunities out there. We just want to whet their appetite today and get them excited about what you're doing, because this is so unique. I haven't seen anything like this in my over a year of broadcasting land shows. And my show is anything to do with land, and obviously this fits in with it perfectly, and you're a great guest. This Ozone Zone Fund, if I may, the opportunity program allows for the sale of any appreciated assets, such as stocks, with a reinvestment of the gain into an opportunity zone fund. There are no requirements to invest in a like-kind property or defer the gain. Qualified opportunity zone probably includes newly issued stock, partnership interests, or business property in qualified opportunity zoned business. Opportunity fund investments are limited to equity investments in business, real estate, and business assets that are located in a qualified opportunity zone. This was a federal government tax cuts and jobs act of 2017, a couple years ago, established the qualified opportunity zone provision to stimulate economic development. These provisions provide potentially significant tax benefits to investors who reinvest capital gains into their long-term investments or their QOZs. So why is investing in the Opportunity Zone Fund? What is this all about? Explain this.
So, yeah, you kind of laid out the basics, but, you know, when they did the tax reform bill, I keep saying last year, but it was actually December of 2017. You know, as most people know, there's a lot of government programs wrapped around real estate and incentives for people to invest, and there's this is just the latest part of that whole tax reform package, and this is to stimulate people to invest in areas that are just not doing that well economically. And there's 8,700 opportunity zones across the U.S. And interestingly, Puerto Rico, the entire island, is an opportunity zone. But these opportunity zones are roughly split up between rural areas and urban areas. So the urban areas, as you might think, are probably, you know, sort of inner city areas or just, you know, neighborhoods that need some investment and needs to be redeveloped. But the urban areas, a lot of those are in farmland,
right,
and farming areas. So it makes a lot of sense from an opportunity, from a investment standpoint on the agriculture side. There's some opportunities. This opportunity zones, there's a lot of money. I read flowing into these things. I read something a few weeks back that there's $144 billion that's already been committed to opportunity zones. Thing is, they're mostly in real estate. So people are building low-income housing or apartment buildings, warehouse projects, things like that. But it makes a lot of sense from the farm aspect as well, agriculture. So we sort of saw these things springing up last year and decided, hey, we're going to do this on our own, and we're going to focus on agriculture, and we're going to focus on sustainable agriculture. And so we're in the process of putting together this opportunity zone fund, sustainable agriculture opportunity zone fund. And it's the big thing about it is, if you're an investor and say you sold stock, say you sold a piece of land or a piece of real estate, or you sold your business and you're sitting on capital gains, well, you're going to be paying some amount of capital gains tax, depending on whether long-term, short-term capital gains and what your income tax bracket is.
Right.
You can now use this opportunity zone fund investment to reduce and defer those capital gains. So it's kind of like maybe some of your listeners are familiar with 1031 exchanges.
That's what I was going to say. That. Yeah, I teach about that.
But you don't need that qualified intermediary, and you also don't have to have a like-kind investment. So, you know, you sell your Microsoft stock because you're afraid stock market's about to go down. Now you're sitting on $50,000 in capital gains. What are you going to do with it? So this opportunity zone fund, take, for example, that $50,000 and you invest it. There's sort of three benefits with the opportunity zone. The first one is those capital gains from the sale of any asset. You have 180 days to reinvest it, which is longer than you have with a 1031. Or at least the commitment part, they're deferred until the sale of your new investment or December 31st, 2026. Now, I have no clue where I set up December 31st, 2026, but basically when you invest in capital gains, you got to be prepared to recognize those capital gains and pay those taxes in 2026. So you're sitting, if you invest, say, this year, you're at least deferring that taxable investment recognition for 7 years. But that said, when you're going to get a step up in basis. So the second part of this is if you hold your investment for 5 years, you get a tax basis increase of 10%. And if you hold it for 7 years, you get a tax basis increase of 15%. So basically there, you save money on the amount of capital gains you're going to have to pay after you deferred them some amount of time. And then the kind of coolest part about this is, so if you take that $50,000 in those gains that you invested 10 years from now, so it's definitely a long-term investment, you don't have to pay any capital gains on any of the appreciation in the fund. So if that $50,000 is now doubled in size to $100,000 after a 10-year period, you don't have to pay capital gains on that additional $50,000. So the permanent exclusion, it applies only to the gains that were accrued in the opportunity zone fund. And, you know, this is a pretty complicated part of the law, Lou, that the actual rules are still sort of changing. They're still being developed by the IRS, so it's like anything else. Congress passed the law,
sure.
And then regulators have to kind of figure out how to apply it. So definitely if you're interested in something like this, you need to sort of talk to your CPA or your tax advisor before you invest. But we're really excited about giving this opportunity for people that want to put their investments into agriculture. And when I say sustainable agriculture, we're specifically looking at some of those things we talked about, like the projects. We talked to some of the farmers that have operations in agriculture or in opportunity zones.
Right.
Some of them are doing the indoor agriculture. Some of them are doing organic. Some of them are doing, like, livestock that's humanely raised, which is a big deal these days. People want to know that their cows or their pigs or their sheep were well taken care of and had a happy life before they end up on your steak plate or whatever. The sustainable agriculture is important to a lot of investors, and we want to offer that ability to invest in something like this.
I wish you luck with that. Sounds like a fabulous project for you. Where do I go to see where these actual physical zones are? Is there a website or something? I mean, how could I find out what's right here in my backyard, if anything?
Yeah, there's a website. I don't know if we have a link to it from our website, but you can see if your land, if you're, a landowner or a farmer or you're looking to acquire a piece of land, Google Opportunity Zone Funds. There's a map out there. There's several websites that have these maps that basically have taken this government data and put out plot down to the nearest street level. And you can determine whether or not your land you're looking at is in an opportunity zone fund. And it's weird. Some of these, you know, we talk to farmers and say, hey, I think I'm in an opportunity zone fund. And then you look at a map and it's like right across the road. And they're that specific. And people ask, well, how did they figure out these opportunity zone funds, where they're at? And it was purely left up to the state. So, you know, Congress and the federal government passed a law, but it was up to the states and local levels to determine whether or not their area was in an opportunity zone fund.
Interesting. Hey, this is pretty exciting. I want to know more about this. Maybe we can do another show on it and really get into it. Wealth managers, this is for them, okay, if we want to address those, if that's okay. For family offices, registered investment advisors, chartered alternative investment analysis, and any other planners who help their clients understand the access alternative investment, Harvest Returns, that's Chris's company, is the ideal place to find private offerings in farmland and timberland. Persistently low interest rates, record high equity market levels, and commercial real estate market that was peaked in some areas have limited traditional asset classes. Farmland and timberland both provide safe diversifications and solid returns. No correlated alternative investment. Institutions such as pension funds, university endowments have long favored agricultural assets for their diversification benefits, but until recently these products have been challenging for individual investors to access. Harvest Returns, this is your commercial I'm doing for you, Chris. Harvest Returns platform allows your clients to access similar private placement products which reduce volatility and decrease overall portfolio risk. Farmlands, like any, is likely to outperform most assets. It's still my first choice for long-term investment. That's Jeremy Graham from the Barrons. So whether your client's looking for conservative, yield-based farmland deals or high multiple return agriculture development opportunities from emerging markets, our platforms have a variety of options. Offering the platform includes Reg D, 506C, accredited investors only. Of course, the 506B, up to 35 non-accredited sophisticated investors, and minimum start as low as $5,000, making the deal for someone new in the agricultural class, and once they get involved, I'm sure they'll want to participate more. Your ESG conscious investments, many agricultural products on the platforms can also be considered sustainable investments as an asset with growing demand among high net worth millennials. Post offerings have included hydroponic organic produce operation, grass-fed and grass-finished humanely raised livestock product for your investor looking for a tax advantage offered. Visit your sustainable agricultural zone on your website. So congratulations on what you're doing. With just about 7 or 8 minutes left here, tell me about your staff. You got an advisory board with some very distinguished folks on there. Tell me a little bit about your company, your employees.
Yeah, Luke, can you say that last thing again?
I'm sorry? Chris, did I lose you?
Hey, Luke, can you repeat that last question, please?
Yeah, I just wanted to let you tell me about some of your employees and your advisory board.
Oh, sure, yeah. So we have a pretty diverse team of employees. We've got people. My partner, Austin, he's another military veteran, our COO, and he spent a lot of time on farms growing up, his grandparents' farm, and he went in the Army, and then he got out and spent a lot of time traveling, doing things for the State Department, USAID, and when he was finishing up his master's degree, that's when I asked him we've known each other for a long time and done some business together, and we brought him on board. We've got some people that are our marketing department specialized in ag communications, so they know how to talk to farmers or investors. We've got a really great finance and accounting team. And then we've got some advisory board members who are, they're either current CEOs or ex-CEOs, or we've got a retired one-star general on the advisory board, and people who have experience in farm companies, tech companies, investments, all sorts of things. So we've got a really good team that I hope the sum of the parts are greater than the individual.
It's quite impressive group you put together. I was reading some of their background. Go to his website, Harvest Fund, Harvest Returns. I'm sorry, .com, and pick that up. What's three things that we talked about that we want to leave our listeners to remind them? Give me three things that are important about what you're doing. Chris, can you hear me?
Yeah.
About three things that we're doing. Three things that we've talked about today you want to leave our listening audience with.
Sure. So I don't know if it's three things, but...
Or four.
Agriculture is a new investment for most people. There's a lot to learn about it. There's a lot of different types. We talked about it, several different types. We have educational material on our website, blogs, links to podcasts, things like that. So that's... before you invest in something, you should understand it. And so we highly encourage people to not only consult their investing professionals, but to go out and read and absorb some of the educational material before they invest. So that'd be one thing. Second is think differently about your stock portfolio. It you may be just wondering how you should diversify and kind of what we think is do what the pros do and have some of your assets there in real investments. And the final thing is, if you're a farmer and you're looking to do something different and expand your operation and do it creatively and get, buy some new land or buy some new infrastructure for your project or start something new, consider, after you talk to your bank, consider just visiting our website and seeing what we have to offer and give us a call or send us an email, and we'd be happy to talk to how we might be able to help you.
Perfect. So, again, how do you find your clients, not your investors, but how do you find your projects? Like I said, they're coming to your networking.
They come to us. So at first we started, we did some advertising, we did some visits, some farm shows, but people Google, I need money for my farm, and we come up there towards the top, or investments in agriculture. We're up there towards the top of search engines. So that's where most people find us.
Gotcha. My mother's family, we have right around 900 acres that my grandfather and grandfather starting in 1909 in Surry County, which is kind of a northern Virginia boundary. It's North Carolina, but it boundaries with Virginia. Agricultural county, kind of in the foothills, part of the Blue Ridge Mountains is in the western part of it, but we've got the rolling foothills and... mother was one of 10 children, and all of that property, almost five generations now, is still in the family. Not one inch has been sold. Anytime somebody will sell something, somebody in the family usually buys it, which hasn't really happened that often. But we had the dairy farm. Granddaddy did, my uncle, and then, of course, they abandoned that a number of years ago. You know, I don't know where all this milk comes from, but I think they had over 500 head, and it took them 6 months to liquidate them. I think half of them went to Michigan and the other half to Florida. But now they have 12 chicken houses and producing. But the land is fed by my family. It's put people through schools. It's built them homes. It is the best investment. It's what I advocate for. And I love this program. I love what you're doing, and hopefully we can help you get the word out there, Chris, and get more people involved, especially that zone. That's crazy, the Opportunity Zone. Definitely going to look at that. That may be worthy of another show and get some more opportunity. So what else can we talk about? We got about 2 minutes left here. Finish up.
Sure. Well, we encourage people to think about where their food comes from. You know, we talk about connecting investors to their food system, and people take their food for granted. And people think that chocolate milk comes from brown cows and all that sort of stuff. Now
that's what I used to think.
Uneducated about it. So go out there and find out where your food comes from, and get connected to farmers. And one way we think you can do it is to invest in. And when you invest in our farming projects, you can also go and visit them. Everybody we deal with, one of the requirements that if you want to raise money from our investors is you have to be willing to let our investors come visit your farming operation. So, get out there, whether it's investing with us or go out there and get in the country and go visit some land and get some fresh air and visit a farmer and see how your food is grown.
Yeah, and with these zone things, I mean, it might be right here in my backyard. The project you might be involved in. This is good stuff. All right, let's let people know how we can get in touch with you, Chris. We'll finish up here.
Okay, so we're on best way is just come Harvest Returns, www.harvestreturns.com. There's, like I said, there's a lot of educational material out there, but we're also on social media. So we've got Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Occasionally we'll be on, agriculture shows or investment shows. You can meet us in person. You can call us. We've got a phone number. You can write us. You can instant messenger us. We'll pretty much respond to anything. And we'd love to hear from farmers. We like to hear from investors as well.
Now, I'll download this on my website, letstalkland.net, and we'll have your email address if that's okay. So the only thing I ask, if people inquire, you respond. And I'm sure you will, Chris. You've been a great guest today, and we appreciate having you on. What a great subject. One of my best shows so far, I think. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Yes, sir. My pleasure. Thank you for joining us today. Let us know how you like the show. If you have any guests or topics you'd like to suggest, we'd appreciate them. All questions are welcome, and all of our guests may be emailed with your questions or concern as well. The show is for the public and, most importantly, for real estate agents who do not have a source for land education. All shows are downloaded after they're broadcast on www.letstalkland.net, no apostrophe, letstalkland.net. It's also on Podbeam, Spotify, Facebook, YouTube, and more. My email is lou@mylandpro.com. I sell 336-669-1405. And, Rodney, how do they get in touch with us here?
Well, they can tune us in. Hello. I don't think my mic was on.
Well.
There we go. They can tune us in every Saturday morning now from 9 till 10. New time for Let's Talk Land. And then Dr. Barbie will follow your show there. And also they can download the Simple Radio app. Go to Simple Radio app and download it. You can listen to us anywhere in the world, even in Germany.
Even in Germany?
Yes.
Wow. Worldwide.
Worldwide.
All right. This has been a great show. We'll see you next week.